Sunday House Call is focused on the promising research and a greater understanding on the effects of vitamin D. We have had principal investigators discuss its effects on reducing the rate of falls in the elderly, reducing the risk of colon and breast cancer recurrence, reduction of stress fractures in young women, its effects on retarding progression of macular degeneration, and other studies have suggested that it can reduce the risk of developing MS. In each instance, these areas of research continue to support, through evidence-based findings, that vitamin D does more than help maintain bone strength and density. And this is Vitamin D Awareness Month, and I'm pleased to introduce Dr. Reinhold Vieth, Director of the Bone and Mineral Laboratory, which is the regional reference laboratory for biochemical testing related to vitamin D nutrition and osteoporosis at Mount Sinai Hospital. He's professor at the University of Toronto in the Department of Nutritional Sciences and the Department of Laboratory Medicine and Pathobiology. He is fellow of the Canadian Academy of Clinical Biochemists and is researcher in the field of vitamin D for over 30 years and an expert in the toxicology and clinical nutrition of vitamin D. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I wanted to start off for our listeners to define what exactly vitamin D is in terms of the nomenclature that we use. Is this a vitamin? Some people say this is a hormone. What exactly is this compound?
Vitamin D is the reason we have the word vitamin. It's actually the very first ever vitamin. What we used to call 100 years ago vitamin A, vital amine A, was something that was present in fish oils when they were doing rat experiments in universities a long time ago. What happened was when they had rats in animal facilities, they tend to get bone disease and eye disease and didn't thrive. So some smart person said, well, let's give them some cod liver oil. That's what we, you know, do for people with those problems. And voila, the animals got better. So then they went, oh, this is in oils. We'll call it vital amine A. And the stuff that is present in the water-soluble things that's a good nutrient, we'll call that vital amine B.
Okay.
When you think about vitamin D, look at them all. Like there's vitamin B1, B2, B2, you know, you name it. They're all different. They're a category. They're in water. What A, for about 10 or 15 years, was the anti-rachitic nutrient. When people start to do the chemistry of it, eventually they kind of pulled out what we now call vitamin A because they could, you know, break it down with ultraviolet light and show that it affected the eyes. And then eventually it took a little bit longer as they went through the alphabet. You know, they discovered vitamin C and finally purified this other anti-rachitic agent that used to be anti-rachitic A. So now, you are asking me, is vitamin D a vitamin? Absolutely it is.
Okay.
One of the misnomers that people start to get confused about, they go, well, wait a minute, a vitamin has to come from food. Not true. The definition of a vitamin is a micronutrient, something you take in small amounts, which, if it is not present in your diet, can result in disease. It does not mean it has to be in your diet. So vitamin D, it's the sunshine vitamin. We get it, from sunshine. And most of what we get comes from sunshine. It comes, you know, from certain foods that happen to have some vitamin D in it. You know, nowadays, of course, you can get it from supplements. But absolutely, vitamin D by itself is truly a vitamin and the first ever vitamin discovered. You ask, is it a hormone? Well, that's where the story gets complicated because, by the way.
Yes.
You personally, when in a typical week, how many patients do you measure a serum 25-hydroxy-D level on?
I'm glad you asked that. In fact, I screen every one of my patients with that and found that about 80 to 85% of them have either insufficient or deficient levels of D25.
Ah, you know, I'm surprised that you screen that many, and I think what you're doing is totally correct. Very few physicians actually do it. A lot of patients ask for a serum 25-hydroxy-D, and their doctors are always trying to talk them out of it. I think often because what they don't know, they don't want to have anything to do with. Now, getting back to what does vitamin D do? Firstly, the sunshine or the supplement that you take, it raises your vitamin D level, but automatically, within a day or two, your liver makes this thing called 25-hydroxy vitamin D, and that stays in your body for a long time. it has what's called a half-life of about 2 months. In other words, it goes down by a half every second month if you were to join the Navy and not take vitamins and things, go in a submarine. So we have this thing, 25-hydroxy, that's our measure of long-term vitamin D status to tell us how much we've had. But that by itself doesn't do anything. It's there and easily measured. The interesting part about vitamin D is that every one of our, or most of our organs and tissues have the ability to take 25-hydroxy from the bloodstream and alter it into a molecule that sends messages to neighboring cells. So if you think about every, you know, various tissues in your body, such as the prostate, your breast tissue, your immune system, right, your kidney, etc., each one acts like a building. It, that building and the people who work in it need paper, for example, to communicate with each other. Paper by itself doesn't do anything. 25-hydroxy by itself doesn't do anything. It's altered by the individual cells within that tissue or the people, you know, like paper would be, to send a message. So when you think about vitamin D deficiency and your body, it's almost as if somebody were to have said in a city, we're going to make do with a fraction of the paper that we had last year. You may put, you know, notes on paper and communicate, but you can only put, you know, a tenth of them now, which will, for the most part, still be fine. Most messages will get through, but when you're deprived of the raw material that you need to send a message, you'll screw up somewhere. So that, for example, you know, you have different buildings do different things, different tissues do different things. They all use the same paper, but the message that gets sent tells the cells to do different things. You know, the prostate will behave different from your bone cells, etc. So the reason vitamin D has gotten so interesting over the last 20 years is we've learned that, hey, it's not just needed to help you absorb calcium from your food. Vitamin D is needed by breast tissue to help breast tissue develop properly. It's needed by the prostate and by bowel. You know, it sort of crosses almost every aspect of medicine. It's quite exciting.
We're in conversation with Dr. Reinhold Wieth, Director of the Bone and Mineral Laboratory, which is the regional reference laboratory for biochemical testing related to vitamin D, nutrition, and osteoporosis at Mount Sinai Hospital. He's also a professor at the University of Toronto in the Department of Nutritional Sciences and the Department of Laboratory Medicine and Pathobiology. And when we come back, I want to continue the conversation about the basic science that has led to our understanding of how vitamin D interacts, as Dr. Wieth was mentioning, with various organs and tissues in our body. Who is more susceptible? What should people be doing? As he mentioned in the interview at the beginning, if I test for vitamin D levels and how many people don't have this level done, and also to get into as well what the optimum levels are. What is the science telling us? What should these levels be, and what should people be taking on a day-to-day basis, either through exposure in our environment or through supplementation? I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin, and you're listening to Sunday House Call. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.